The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings both extraterrestrial and interdimensional, and welcome to Who Won the Week, a podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am your host, Adam Swiderski from Sci-Fi Wire, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host and friend, Kara Mahorn, a.k.a. The Blurred Girl.
Hello, happy new year.
Happy new year.
Hello.
Welcome to the future, everyone. It's day three of 2020, and World War III is trending on Twitter.
There you go. In three different ways.
Yeah, so that just shows you, you know, it's going to be a
ride. Holy house of cards, Batman.
Anyway, but enough about that. Let's talk about something fun. We're going to talk about the usual stuff. There's a lot going on for early in the year. Quiet Place 2 dropped a trailer. We got some news about some shows on Netflix getting renewed. There's a lot of conversation happening in the wake of the Star Wars movie that we're going to dip into a little bit. Doctor Who returned for its next series on January 1st with a big reveal that we're going to get into. And then we're going to look ahead to the movies of 2020 and what we are most excited about, because there is a lot happening there. But before we do that, we always like to kick things off by talking about what we personally are geeking out about, what is winning our week. So, Karima, take it away.
It's really hard to find stuff that's winning your week when the whole week has been like a holiday too.
It's the Friday that's a Tuesday today.
It is. Oh my God. All week it's been like, is it Sunday? So the thing that I'm geeking out about is a movie actually on Netflix. I caught up on a lot of movies over the holidays, but one in particular was called Shadow. Shadow is a, and for those of you who recognize, it's a Zhang Yimou film, and forgive me if I'm saying his name wrong, but he is the person behind Hero, Raise the Red Lantern, House of Flying Daggers. So he is the martial arts, like the martial arts movie maker that you want to watch. And Shadow is basically takes place in feudal China, of course. And basically, it is about two warring kingdoms. And it starts with the king that is basically very, very gravely injured from a battle that happened years before. A commander who's badly injured years before in a battle. But you don't realize that because he's been living in hiding. And a man who is his shadow has basically been fighting for him like this entire time. And it's a really, really interesting twist on, if anybody has seen the trailers, it's the guy that fights with the umbrella that has all made out of knives and swords. I find it actually really, really fascinating. It's this concept of yin and yang, and there is a supernatural element to it because of, like, you know, the wire work and things like that. People are kind of like flying and stuff. But one thing that Zhang Yimou is always really, really good at is working with color. And anybody who remembers Hero, every house had a different color, blue, red, green, yellow. What was interesting about this movie is it was all in black and white. I don't mean it was a black and white film. I mean, all of the colors worn by everybody, the sets, everything were all black and white with these really rich contrasting colors. It was really, really beautifully done. And basically the story is about how this shadow, this man who was adopted as a child and raised in secret to basically replace this commander, was he ever gravely injured, basically takes over. And not in a bad way. There's a lot of corruptions and things in the kingdom, and it's just fascinating. And if you're a fan of martial arts, you will love, especially things like Aikido and the very yin type of fighting. It'll blow you away. Ooh. It's beautifully, beautifully done. And if you are a fan, like I said, of Zhang Yimou and martial arts films, it's a must watch. So that's what I'm geeking out.
Wow.
Over.
I will have to must watch that.
I'll send you a link.
Because, I am a fan of those things. And I've heard the scenes with the umbrellas are actually really, really cool.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. They're really, really good.
Cool. So there's only one thing that's been on my mind. the past week in this space, and it is that I want to toss a coin to my witcher.
Valley of Plenty. I knew it.
All right, so Karma made my new year recently by sending me a remix of Toss a Coin to Your Witcher by Kyle Reclaim. I don't know if it's Reclaim or Reclaim, whatever.
Anybody who's been on my Twitter or my Instagram has seen me raving about this guy.
So. Yes, and it is not the only club mix
it is not.
Of Toss a Coin to Your Witcher, for which I am eternally grateful. it's my favorite song possibly ever. That's not true. But no, it's crazy. Man, I am so glad that it's kind of caught on in the way that it has. It's such a weird, goofy, hilarious song. And it drives my wife absolutely insane.
I just think the bard in that whole show became the secondary character that we just didn't know we were going to love like that.
Well, I think it's whether people love him or not is up for debate. You know, some love him as I do, some do not. And that song is just so funny because the verses, I personally think the verses are really goofy and kind of dumb in terms of, like, we were talking about this earlier, like, he says he can't be bleat.
He can't be bleat, right?
I guess because he was fighting a goat man, but even still, that's a weird turn of phrase. Or, like, give him the rest, and they don't explain the rest of what.
Right, or does he need a rest? Does he need a nap? What is that exactly?
So it's weird, but then that hook comes in, man.
Yeah. It's that
the toss a coin to your witcher hook is it's embedded in my brain for all eternity. On my deathbed, which hopefully will be many, many years from now. I will be singing Toss a Coin to Your Witcher. So thanks for that, everybody.
You're welcome.
And thanks, internet, for keeping this meme alive. I appreciate it. I want to hear more. I want this to replace Old Town Road as the top song of all time. With Billy Ray Cyrus, get on that Toss a Coin to Your Witcher remix. Because it's going to happen.
Wait, right, with Lil Nas X. I'm done.
All right. So that's what we're geeking out about, but let's get into what's going on because there's a lot to cover. Mm-hmm.
It's a new year.
Yeah. Let's talk really quick about A Quiet Place 2.
I don't know why you came all the way up here.
There's nothing left.
Please. There are people out there worth saving.
The people that are left. They're not the kind of people worth saving.
Yeah, that the trailer dropped and it's terrifying.
We'd had a first teaser, and now we've got our first full trailer. The cat is kind of out of the bag in terms of how the monsters look.
Yeah.
So the trailer has a lot of monsters in it, you know, relative to what we saw the first time around.
But I'm trying to figure out, is it a prequel? Are we seeing part of a prequel in the trailer?
Because the trailer opens with basically the beginning of the monster apocalypse invasion. And my theory is just that we're going to get some flashbacks because there's a lot also in here from after.
After when the husband is gone, she's with the kids by herself. So it looks justifiably terrifying.
Well, and the interesting thing too, though, is like what I want to know, I guess, is because it seemed like they had figured out by the end of the first movie, and we talked about this the first time around with the teaser, what worked, right? Like the kids' feedback from the hearing
because
aids.
Because they're so sensitive.
So why is that not just every time they come around, they just turn that on? Maybe the batteries run out. I don't know.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Maybe they're on their way to find some lithium.
And it seems like where we're going with A Quiet Place 2 is based on some of this, is one of the lines that Cillian Murphy says near the end, right? He says, because she says something about saving people, and he says the people who are still around aren't the kind of people you want to save.
Oh.
You know, and so it's a very, in apocalypse movies, whether it's 28 Days Later or Day of the Dead or any of these movies, it's always like, perhaps the true monster is man.
Right, you know? Right. Or then when you look at it logistically, the people that get saved are the people that are like, indoors, underground, like incarcerated in hospitals, and
or just
you know,
that they were, I guess, brutal enough to survive. You know, but so it sounds like they're setting that up. Some that there's going to be, in addition to the monsters this time, there are going to be human antagonists.
Yeah.
For them to face off against, which is an interesting take. Again, it's kind of a trope in this apocalyptic genre, but you know, given that we're dealing with different forms of monsters here and everything, it could be interesting. I don't know. I mean, are you excited for A Quiet Place 2?
I can see myself seeing this more than I can see myself seeing the Gretel and Hansel movie. That trailer dropped this week, too. It equally terrified me, but that was like dark and gross and blah.
Yeah.
And like in the woods in a tree with an old woman and ooh. So yeah, I think I could probably see this one on a scale of like what I would listen to and actually watch.
Yeah. I mean, I like Emily Blunt a lot.
I do too.
I'm glad to see Cillian Murphy anytime he shows up.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's
because he wasn't in the first one.
He was not.
Right.
This is a new character that they encounter this time around. You know, a lot about the plot is still left up in the air, but you see a lot of the monsters, and I like the. We also see apparently some flashbacks for him, his character when the apocalypse happened, and kind of how he survived. So,
but he's also very good at playing those duplicitous characters. So maybe he's one of the people,
or even not necessarily duplicitous, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know where he's coming from necessarily. So I like the idea of seeing the beginning, like how things all fell apart at the beginning. And,
it's almost like a little bit of a Fear of the Walking Dead kind of thing.
I'm intrigued, but I feel like it's going to be a very different vibe from the first film. Because the first film was very much that, you know, bottle kind of contained thing. They're all
put
in the
a baby
house,
in a box,
and you have to be super quiet all the time.
Yeah,
it had that vibe in theaters where people were saying like nobody in the theater was making a sound because it was so silent all the time. You know what's being set up here? I don't know if it's going to evoke that same vibe, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be bad.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they're because John, I'm saying it wrong, Krasinski. Clearly his character, if you haven't watched the first movie, this is, you know, you've had a long time to watch this movie.
Yeah.
But he's gone by the end of the movie. So, but he's directing this. But I'm wondering when that he's going to show up in some more of the flashbacks and things like that. But I also find it interesting because I don't think when the first movie dropped, anybody clocked it as, you know, Emily Blunt and her husband, you know, doing this little horror art film. Wouldn't it be cute? Not thinking that it would really be as successful as it was.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder, I have to wonder if this, if the story idea for a sequel was there from the beginning. They were like, ooh, if this does well, what are we going to do? Or if it wasn't until this thing blew up.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh crap, now we have to come up with a way to
back, like, do another
story.
One. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. Perhaps the true monster is man, the end. So that's A Quiet Place too. Karma, you also saw some news from Netflix that you really were excited about.
So. I was excited to see that another little show that we didn't think was going to get a second season, Raising Dion, is getting a second season. And it was just announced by via teaser yesterday. And I just liked the teaser because it's using a Senegalese artist that I like. They didn't use any characters from the show. They just used this artist, Boubou, I believe is how you say his name, B-O-U-B-O-U. Forgive me if I'm saying it wrong. He is this really fantastic performance artist that has that paints everything upside down. And so you see him in close-ups working on something and you don't know what it is. And he's working on it with his, you're assuming his daughter. And then when he stands up, he turns the painting right side up. And it's a picture of Dion and his mother from the show. And that's how Netflix announced that it was getting a season two, which I thought was really A, very sweet to incorporate, and B, like, oh, okay. Because I really think that season one had mixed reviews. I don't want to give it away for anybody who's still going to, you know, go back and watch it. But it did have a slow burn. And I feel that a lot of Netflix shows that have like 13 episodes, it could have been done at 10 or 8. But I do think it managed to pull off what it intended. And I also think, look, the star power of Michael B. Jordan has something going for it. You know,
sure.
He played the dad. So, and but he didn't dominate. He really stepped aside because his character had already passed away when the show story starts. So I think the fact that he sort of lent his name to it, stepped aside and let the other actors get their shine was really nice too. So yeah, I'm curious to see what's going to happen. Not quite sure. Again, this is another one where I don't think they went into this thinking they were going to get a season two. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to go back and watch season one because it was one of those things where there's so much content out there, and it was definitely a story I was interested in. But now that I know that I'm going to have even more to watch, it's time for me to catch up on Raising Dion. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't want to give it away, but watching John Ritter's son transform was a very interesting part of the show. And that's my biggest question for season two, but we'll see.
All right. So that's a little bit of the news. Actually, there's one more piece of news that I want to talk about. It's not one piece of news. There's been a lot of news around this. And this is going to be my those of you who are old enough to remember 60 Minutes and Andy Rooney. My 60 Minutes Andy Rooney. Rant. Because there has been, so Rise of Skywalker came out a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Has done pretty well at the box office. You know, it's not going to beat Avengers by any stretch of the imagination, but it also did not bomb.
Like Cats?
Yeah. It's done pretty, and not even, that's understatement. It's done pretty well, but you know, mixed reaction from critics, and there was some criticism about the story and some of the details and everything. And there's been a lot of conversation in the weeks that have followed with various people involved with the film, whether it's J.J. Abrams at a Q&A or the film's editor or one of the screenwriters, filling in a lot of story details and breathless coverage of this all over the internet. And it is driving me up a wall.
Well, it's also odd because one of the things that I felt when I saw the movie was that they were trying to explain too much and cater a little bit too much to too many people. And it's weird that it sort of found its way off screen.
Yeah. And like, or even stuff like, you know, they put out the visual dictionary for the film. And in that, there's a little scene between Lando and Jenna, the you know, deserted stormtrooper who joins the resistance.
Kerry Russell, who doesn't take her helmet off.
Yeah, no, there's a little scene. No, Lando and Jenna. Not,
oh, Jenna. Yeah, sorry, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
And it's weird because Lando's like, oh, well, maybe we can find out.
Find your family. Yeah.
Yeah. And people are like, is he hitting on her? Because Lando's a smooth operator, you know? Is it?
Ew.
Right. Well, but so. I mean, he's old, whatever. Or what's going on there? And in the visual dictionary, it's implied or stated that she could be his daughter. Or like, and
but you know what? I remember people were
freaking out about this.
Yeah, I said when I saw the movie, if he turned around and says, Jenna, I'm your father, I was going to walk out of the movie theater because I wanted to not know.
I would have been okay with it, though. That's the thing. Like, it drives me crazy that we're all going
nuts. But they're still talking about it.
Well, I was still talking about it, but like people are talking about this stuff as if it in some way has anything to do with the film. And it doesn't. The film is what's on the screen.
Right.
When you watch the movie in the movie theater or at home, the film is what is presented to you with words that are said, the actions that are shown, etc. Anything that's said outside of that, to me, doesn't count. It may count in the canon, the overall canon, but it doesn't like...
If there's a comic book or a book that relates to it, you're not saying the comic book or the books don't matter. You're talking about just the chatter.
To hear... Well, no, but even the visual dictionary, like to hear that Lando could be that character's
father
does not in any way enrich the film.
No.
Because you know why? It's not in the film. It's not even subtext in the film.
Yeah.
There's nothing there to indicate a connection between these two characters other than that little conversation they have at the end that doesn't have any dialogue that implies a connection.
Right.
And you know, J.J. Abrams is like explaining certain things about the Emperor and Rey and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, no, it's not in the movie. And then so I was on a bit of a warpath about this earlier. And then this morning I saw a story that was actually, I think, from a couple days ago where The Rock had posted a tribute to Rory.
Oh, what's on his Jumanji.
Name? Yeah. Rory McCann, I think is his name.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Rory McCann, who played the Hound in Game of Thrones and was the villain Jurgen the Brute in Jumanji, the next level. And that's great. He's, you know, I like this working with this guy, all this stuff.
He's the guy from Game of Thrones, you guys don't remember.
Yeah, from the Hound, from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And then he says at the end of the post, cool plot twist about Jurgen for those who caught it is he's an actual avatar in the game, meaning someone is playing him, but who? That's the big mystery. Like, no, it's not. No one could catch it because there is absolutely nothing in the film to indicate that.
Is he referring to a deleted scene? Because we didn't see that.
I'm not, and listen, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, certainly, but I'm not dumb. And I've seen a lot of movies.
I saw that movie too, and I don't remember seeing it in there.
You know when there's a hint there or there's a subtext or something that says, ooh, something more might be going on here. And we, in fact, talked in this very podcast about how I thought that would have been a cool twist, right? Like just to have the villain in this game be another avatar. And apparently I was right.
But I'm not, because
it's not in the movie.
Just like the glitching thing we talked about, it could have been there.
And the thing is, like,
it.
You know, the article, yeah, exactly, right, the glitching thing. And the thing is, in the article that was covering this, The Rock's post, people were starting, ooh, we all need to speculate, who's playing this avatar? And it's just like, we just need to get clicks, we need to stop doing that.
Clickbait, rather.
But just, like, I get, and listen, like, I understand, like, I geek out about stuff, too. I want to know everything that's going on. I like reading a lot of the Star Wars books and comics, etc. But this constant like filling in of things that as a way of again, like justifying what things that are not in the actual product.
Uh-huh.
To me, is driving me crazy. I can't deal with it.
Well, it's funny. I was surprised. No, I don't think you are but what I think is interesting about it is, because fans always do this, but what you said two things that were very interesting to me, and that was the fact that The Rock was the one to talk about Jumanji, and also J.J. Abrams actually coming out and explaining more. Like, I'm thinking as a director, if you've seen my movie and if you don't get it, then it's something that I haven't executed properly, or you've taken it in a different direction, or you've taken the art that I've created in a different way, which is right. Fine. But to sit there and go, okay, no, I'm going to explain it to you, kind of makes me think like maybe you didn't like what you did.
Right.
So it's just weird. But at the same time, good attention, bad attention, it's all attention. I think all of this fuels the sale, the aftermarket sales of, you know, the DVDs and rentals and things like that. So keeping the conversation going, I guess, is also in the best interest of, you know, start the franchise and stuff. So I think that's why maybe the actors and director are jumping on the bandwagon. Because fans do this all the time, and it's ad nauseum. You're like, let it go, literally. but the fact that the actors and the director are getting in on it too is like, okay, what is this? What are you trying to do?
Right.
Is Jumanji coming out on DVD soon? Or
but like I feel like it's changed in a way, because fans, you're right, fans do this, but fans, like, I think about Boba Fett, mm-hmm. right, from the original trilogy. And there was, before the books came out and it was all explaining Boba Fett's backstory, he was a mysterious character. There wasn't a lot in the film about him. So people speculate, where does he come from? What's the deal with his armor? Why does he have a jetpack? All this stuff. But it was all based in what we saw on the screen.
Right.
And that to me is okay. I get that. I don't necessarily love going down those rabbit holes myself, because I want to kind of take things at face value a little bit, but I understand that aspect.
You're grasping.
Yeah. It's like, if it's not there, like, I guess you could say, oh, well, they made a little moment of Lando and Jenna. So what does that mean? You know, ooh, maybe he's her father. All that type of stuff. Okay. Like, you want to speculate on that? Okay. But like, to have it be informed again by this stuff of J.J. Abrams talking at a Q&A,
right.
It's just not, it's not good storytelling to me.
But I also think it's just weird that J.J. Abrams did that. He should have just said, it's all on the screen, guys.
Yeah.
Like, that should have been the reaction. Like, why am I explaining? That's the part that's weird.
Right.
But yeah, it's, look, there's so many shows, and like you said, we're inundated with all this content that sometimes when things pop up on my radar, I'm like, okay, now that's an interesting concept, especially if it's early in the season of a series.
Right.
I will go along with speculation because we're looking for the clues that we're seeing on the screen.
Right.
But when it's a 2-hour movie and it's been done, that's it.
And that's if you want to like look at Jumanji the next level, right? If you want to set up for the next movie, which apparently The Rock says they're doing, like, we're going to find out who the mysterious player was who was playing Jurgen. Okay, that's fine.
But that's not how that movie
ended. But set it up.
Yeah.
You have to set it up. You have to give us some indication. Is he exhibiting behaviors that match what the other avatars do, right, who aren't NPCs, you know, or something that differentiates him from the other NPCs that are in the game? It's the same thing with, like, you know, we talk about with the Emperor in Rise of Skywalker. Is like, if you wanted to make the Emperor the big bad for the whole trilogy, awesome. But you got to set it up. You got to, like, leave breadcrumbs throughout the trilogy so that, right, by the time you get there, you're like, oh, it all makes sense.
It's a huge deal.
And
but then that's not what happened.
It's not what happened at all. And so, you know, that's I can get by. Okay, next movie, it would be so much more impactful for us to find out that Jurgen was an avatar if there was something in the film that would make us...
That led us to believe that.
Or even, like, suspect it. You know, like, ooh, that's different. Why did that happen?
But he, like, repeated himself like an NPC.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, okay.
I guess maybe the only thing is that, you know, when he hit his chest, the box came up that indicated that was his weakness. But again, that's, you know, it asks questions without indicating why they're important. Or it's like, okay, so does everybody have a box? We don't know. You know, the horse had a box, and like, it's
right.
It's just weird. So this is my call to all of us as fans is to we all want to speculate. We all want to theorize. That's fun. And I'm on board, you know, with that. But I think this whole thing of letting people fill in the blanks after the fact and saying that in some way says something about the original product,
right?
Is
canon
is
or...
a bad thing. Like these movies and TV shows and everything need to stand on their own, and the supplemental stuff should supplement it and be great and add details and little fun tidbits and things that weave into the story. But it's not a substitute for storytelling on screen.
Absolutely not. And directors shouldn't be apologizing for the films that they've already directed. Yeah. That's just bizarre. And the editor, too. Ugh.
That's our ranting for today. speaking of things coming back in stories with canon and characters that appear as if from nowhere, Doctor Who.
Something's coming for me. I can feel it.
Let it come.
Because we miss.
Family.
Yeah, now this is going to give speculation because they threw in this season finale like a huge plot twist.
Yeah, yeah. So Doctor Who came back after a year off with its season 13 premiere, I believe this is. Spyfall, part one. Starts out very much a...
No, 12.
Oh, is it season 12?
Yeah.
Yeah. Starts out... You're right. It's 13th Doctor.
We're thinking 13th Doctor is season 12, season, right.
Yeah. So starts out pretty straightforward. You know, it's a spy. It's very obviously the Doctor does James Bond.
Right.
And then massive twist at the end. And so I don't know if we want to get... Let's talk about the episode first in general. And then we'll get to the big spoiler.
And then if you haven't seen it, we'll let you get a moment.
What did you think of this episode?
No, I liked... Like, I did the same thing. I was like, okay, Doctor Who does James Bond. I got it. Cool. And I liked the little moments. I liked seeing everybody sort of play their little parts. And I did like the part, although I was getting tired of it in the last season. I was getting tired of Jodie Whittaker's Doctor like still being confused. She's playing it less confused.
Yeah.
Which I liked because I was like, okay, we've had 13 hours of you being confused. Come on now. You're from Gallifrey. You know who and what you are. I kept thinking, oh, this is kind of mundane in terms of a season premiere. And then the ending happens.
Well, and because the interesting thing was, you know, Chris Chibnall, when he set out to do season 11, was like, you know, we're not bringing back any of the classic villains.
Mm-hmm.
We want this to stand on its own. They're going to do some things differently. And then the New Year's special from last year happened, which involved a Dalek.
Yep.
And people really were on board with that episode. I thought that was a real step up for the Chibnall era of Doctor Who. And then we get this episode, which, again, starts off feeling very Monster of the Week and then takes a turn, which we'll get to in a second. But first, so here's what I thought. Like, I really like Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor. I really like her companions. I wish there were fewer companions. It makes it hard to say. Like, I like all of them on an individual level. They're great. They're fun. They're interesting. You know, you feel for them and you get on board with the companions. But when all four of them are together, like, I want to see more Jodie Whittaker.
Yes.
I want her to get more center stage time.
It almost makes her consciousness is four people. Yeah, that sort of feels like, I know it's not.
Yeah,
but.
And almost like sometimes she takes a back seat in the episode, which I like the companion characters, so I like spending time with them. I'm not sitting there going like, oh, these people are terrible.
No, I just feel like there's one too many.
Yeah, yeah, it just needs more, and it doesn't allow like the relationships that the Doctor has had with their companion over the various seasons of this, you know, like, I'm not saying it has to be romantic like things were with Rose, but there's been that tight bond between the Doctor and a companion or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like having three of them in there, it just hasn't manifested that emotional connection that I've seen in previous incarnations. And again, I think it doesn't give as much screen time to Jodie Whittaker as I would like, because I think she deserves it. I think she's great as the Doctor. I really enjoy her.
I completely agree. And I'm trying to remember the episode I felt last season where there was one too many. I'm like, okay, everybody shut up. I want to hear what the Doctor has to say.
Yeah, exactly. It's and weirdly, it's like it does feel a little less like the Doctor is in charge almost.
Right.
So anyway, but this is a quibble. I mean, overall, I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was great seeing Stephen Fry show up, albeit briefly, but time travel is a thing. So maybe we might see him at some other point. The aliens that were showing up were really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who runs Vore, the search engine, should have been Idris Elba, but it was the guy they got when they couldn't get Idris Elba. No, yeah. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say
no,
that.
No, but
I'm,
I know
he
what
was,
you mean.
He's a great, great guy. He was doing great work, but I was just like, man, I could see Idris Elba in that role.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So
which he should have done and not done Cats, but that's
right. So compelling stuff. But then, so, okay, let's get to the big deal, right? Because, there's these aliens that are killing intelligence agents all over the world. The doctor is tasked with finding out why, goes and tracks down who is basically a Fox Mulder type.
Yeah.
Living in the Australian outback, conspiracy theories, aliens, all that stuff, was, you know, run out of MI6 kind of because he believed in all this crazy stuff that's actually true. Adventure, adventure, adventure. And then, oops, by the way, it turns out that O is actually the master.
Right, which was insane. Oh, spoilers.
Well, whatever. We said we were getting into the spoilers. Yeah, so it's, and it's all, listen, it's there.
It's all
the BBC
internet.
Is posting interviews with the actor now. I can't, he's Sasha...
Dewan?
Yes, thank you. In which he talks about playing the master. So this is not necessarily the best kept secret in the world. But yeah, big, big reveal at the end of the episode. He's been all along. He's behind the whole thing. Oh, and by the way, you know, his house is a TARDIS. And
yeah, see, that's the you know, what's funny, I'm on board with it. But then what happened with me was, where are we? So was he the master before Michelle Gomez's character, and in terms of time and space, or is he after John Sim, but before Michelle Gomez, or is he after Michelle Gomez? Like, you know what I mean? Like, where does he fall in the Gallifrey timeline of things?
Right.
I'm like, that's what's confusing me.
Yeah, it's interesting because this character has been, you know, seemingly played to an end with Michelle
Multiple
Gomez.
Times.
Yeah. And Michelle Gomez, you know, when she was Missy, she was a good guy very briefly and then seemingly killed, right? Seemingly dead. So you're right. Is this a master from the past who's time traveled to the present? How did this actually come about?
Because there was time travel involved in with the master in Peter Capaldi's version.
Well, I mean, they're time lords.
Yeah,
so
yes.
Time travel comes with the territory. And his last line to Jodie Whittaker was, everything you think you know is a lie,
yeah.
Right? So does that have to do with the master's fate and backstory and all this stuff? Like, the one thing I will say is I wish they had dropped, and maybe their breadcrumbs were there and I didn't see them. I wish they had dropped a couple more breadcrumbs throughout the episode as to something weird. Is something's like up with this guy?
The only ones I can think of are not about him. They go back to, because I was just kind of looking through the feed trying to find out if anybody else confused. And people were going back looking at the last season of Peter Capaldi's run when Missy was saying things like, I'm actually a little bit hazy. I'm not quite sure how many times I've regenerated since basically John Sims' version. So it's possible that maybe Sasha Dewan is in between and she just doesn't remember.
Right.
Because clearly memory loss is one of the things that can happen, because that's what Jodie Whittaker's character was dealing with all of last season.
Right.
Like, wait, who am I? Oh, right. That's who I am. So, but this is it. For a show that was getting middle of the road reviews last season, this is one hell of a way to kick off your season.
Yeah, and this is the interesting thing about this, I think, because we've also seen in the trailer for the season that the Cybermen
are coming back. Yeah,
You know, the best received episode of the last season was a New Year's special, which had the Daleks. So while it was seemingly an admirable thing for Chibnall to say, you know, we're going to go in a new direction, new aliens, not going to bring back any of the traditional bads. That apparently is gone.
Yeah, because I think the backlash from the fans was so, no.
I guess, right? And it's, I mean, the interesting thing about that, I think, is that having these traditional villains does, when you have a new person in the role, is kind of give fans a touchstone, right?
Yeah.
It gives them something familiar for the new to bounce off of. So maybe, I don't know if this is a course correction or if it's something they had planned all along, but it's obvious that, you know, now we saw the Daleks in the last New Year's special. Now we have the Master. The Cybermen are coming up. We're going to get some familiar Who stuff this season. And I hope that the Master appearing in this episode is not, you know, this is a two-parter.
Yeah.
So I hope that they won't wrap him up
Just in what? You can't do that to the master.
Well, I mean, you can, you know, like John Sims in the original time came and gone in a few episodes. So, but, you know, will this be the arc that kind of branches over the entire season, gives us a big bad to play against?
Honestly, I think that would be really sense cool. Because what's his name? The evil Tooth Fairy was the baddie for the entire you didn't know it, but he was technically the baddie for the entirety of season one. Right. He came back in the season finale. I call him the evil Tooth Fairy because he's got teeth all over his face. But one of the things that people were yelling about with this new doctor was, oh God, not only is she a woman and not only do you have four companions, but you're throwing out all of the old things that made Doctor Who, Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. I wonder whether or not a lot of the yelling and screaming that was happening, not just by fans, but by critics, made its way to the writer's room. They said, you know what? Let's, instead of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, let's dial this back a little bit and let's bring in things that a lot of classic Who fans are familiar with, but keep our Monster of the Week energy going.
Right.
And if that's the direction they're going, I'm on board. I
mean,
like
that's
that
what, you know, like Tennant and Eccleston, they all had plenty of Monster of the Week stuff. But they also had this, you know, the bad wolf thing or whatever that was kind of, you know, woven throughout the season so that there were big payoffs to be had. And yeah, I mean, I think if they do that this time around, that would be really cool. You know, it was the actor again, Sacha Dhawan, seemed like he was having a tremendous time, you know, chewing the scenery at the end there as the master. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with it moving forward.
Oh, yeah. The actor sort of reminds me of Yahya bin Mateen the Second when he... Abdul Mateen the Second when he was... after his show, after it was revealed that he was Dr. Manhattan on Watchmen and he's on Twitter like,
yeah,
like the actor looks like, you know, D1 here looks like he's having a ball.
I mean, that's the thing is it's if you grew up, especially if you grew up in Britain where Doctor Who, you know, we're all Doctor Who fans and, you know, absorb Britain, but Doctor Who is part of the fabric of British pop culture and has been for a long time. So a lot of these actors who come to the show have some history with that or know who the master is or have, you know, watched these stories as children. And so it's kind of like for us, you see some American actors who, when they get to be in Star Wars, you know, and they're like, ooh,
and there's a lot of them.
Or the Harry Potter movies, you know, where they mean something to be able to play that character in that film. And so that was kind of, it was fun seeing his reaction to being the master. And the funny thing was, I read a funny story where he said he was, when he got cast, he was in a play or a reading of a play with Peter Capaldi
at the time. I didn't know that.
And could not let on as to what had just happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had to like keep this secret from the doctor.
That is hilarious. You know,
this was probably good training for what was coming up in the episode.
Yep.
But yeah, so... I mean, listen, it was a little out of left field, the curveball, but I liked it. I thought it was fun. I'm excited to see where we go from here. It's hard to say. I don't know who I would lose from the companions because they're all
Graham.
Neat.
Graham.
Oh, you don't like Graham?
Graham, you know what it is? Because Graham is always like, okay, Graham's purpose, I felt, in the first season was, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
You know, what is going on? What is a Gallifrey? Whereas I feel like the younger companions were all like, no, I get it. But he was always like, no, I don't get it. And also Nan, like his wife, who he lost. So when he was able to, well, he didn't kill the being that killed his wife. He put him away. But I felt like, okay, his arc is over and we might not see him this season. But no, he's here.
Yeah.
Graham is the only one that I would consider just maybe letting sit down for a few episodes.
Interesting. All right, well. Yeah, I don't know. I like them all. I guess you're right. If I had to lose one, it would probably be him. My honest preference would be to lose two. I don't know the other one would be.
Well, maybe him and his son.
Yas is great.
But then we'd have a female Doctor Who and a female companion.
But that's fine.
And the fandom would lose their minds.
I don't know, because the companions have often been female. So
yes,
it's a very traditional thing. I don't know. I like that dynamic of one companion to one doctor. I know that's not always been the case in classic Who, even like they had multiple companions at various times, but I guess maybe it probably part of it is because that's what I came up with. You know, like I didn't start watching Doctor Who until Eccleston.
Okay.
And from that point until, you know, and they had certain episodes where it's like, oh, you know, various peripheral characters jump on board the TARDIS for a while with the Doctor and the companion.
And then they jump off.
And then they jump off. But yeah, so I've never really until now been long term like, oh, there are multiple companions type of situation. And I don't know. I like that one on one dynamic, but that's not what we're getting. And we'll see how that pans out in season 12. Okay, so that's Doctor Who. That's what's been going on this week. Now we're going to take a look ahead to the rest of 2020. We spent a lot of time in the past couple weeks looking back. But before we do that, let's take a break.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we're back from a break. What a break that was.
So refreshed.
And now that we're refreshed, we're ready to look forward into the future, the year 2020 in film. Lots of movies coming out this year, but this past year, the last Star Wars movie we're going to have for a while, the big Avengers culmination. So weirdly, this year feels like a reset to me almost at the movies. Like there's definitely stuff coming out and there's big stuff. We're going to get into it, but there's no Avengers movie. Marvel's kind of starting a new phase.
Right. Star Wars just
not on the slate.
Yeah.
So a lot of room to get into.
I think a lot of people are throwing their energy into streaming, but there's still a lot happening in movies.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you most excited for this coming year in the movies, Karima?
You know what? I want to say, it's funny. I'm actually very interested to see what happens with Mulan, because Mulan, Disney is not trying to remake the musical. They're trying to make... Basically, Mulan's story is a traditional Chinese story. Like, it's a fable that's told. Like, it's part of the fabric of a lot of Chinese culture. So they seem to be leaning in that direction more than the fantasy, and I think it's fantastic. I'm very curious to see. I was just talking about when I was geeking out about Yang Zimu. It's very much a similar feel. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for...
But Mulan does have... It has sorcery in it.
It does have sorcery in it, but it's not like... We're not getting like a little singing, talking dragging and things like that. No, there's definitely sorcery and there's definitely magic, but there's not like, yay, Disney princess, everything's great. It's, you know... And of course, I'm sure a parent has to die because Disney. then there's also... I'm excited to see Tenet because I don't know anything about it. And it looks really, 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 really interesting.
It's one of those things where it's like, I could say I'm intrigued by that movie because I can't say I'm excited because I have no idea what's going on.
But it's hard to see it.
I'm sure it looks cool.
It does. It looks really, really cool. it's funny. A lot of people aren't excited to see what's going to happen with Bloodshot, but I kind of am because I'm a little bit of a Valiant comic nerd, and I Bloodshot is one of their oldest franchise characters. Yes, it's Vin Diesel. Yes, I know they gave away what looks like the majority of the plot in the trailer, but we don't know. So
I mean, you say yes, it's Vin Diesel, but Vin Diesel is part of one of the most successful movie franchises ever.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Fast and the Furious, so
exactly.
Like he certainly has fans and followers. I don't know. I mean,
he's also Groot, so he picks and chooses his characters well.
Well, and I just wonder. I wonder about that movie because it's a big deal. This is another comic book company kind of entering the fray in a world that A is dominated by Marvel, but DC also has been the other player to put out big stuff. And suddenly now this is our first Valiant film.
Yeah.
One of their most popular characters. Are we looking at a Hellboy situation or is this going to be something where, you know, it's able to actually make some inroads? I'm very curious about that.
I think another one I'm excited about, more like you were saying, I'm intrigued because we haven't seen anything, is the Eternals.
Yeah. Well, we have seen one thing. We've seen Kumail Nanjiani's rock
his
hard abs.
Yes. So he's he's clearly been going to Henry Cavill's gym.
Yeah.
Throwing around weights and ropes and things like that. So,
and not drinking water.
And not drinking water, right. That was the weirdest thing I saw about The Witcher.
I knew about that, though, because you know who else did that? Was Hugh Jackman.
Really? For Wolverine?
For Wolverine.
So like for 2 days, you just dehydrate yourself?
It's like you drink less and less, and then the day before you shoot, you drink no water.
So your muscles are literally constricting and you're cramping.
No, your muscles aren't constricting. It's that you have no water weight in your body, so your skin gets super taut.
Oh, that's how you see the muscles better.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you CGI on me all day. I'm not doing that.
I know. That stuff is crazy. But that's why you give him the rest.
Exactly. That's why he needs to rest.
Exactly.
Give him a coin and some water so he gets some rest. I'm excited about Wonder Woman, and I'm more excited about Wonder Woman than I am about Birds of Prey.
Interesting.
I know that sounds strange.
No, but I mean, I think it's cool that DC's two biggest movies of the year are going to be, I don't know if they have anything else planned. I don't believe they actually do.
I don't think so either.
But are both female fronted superhero films, which I think is great.
I think it's awesome. And I also like, again, I think Wonder Woman 1 was a surprise hit because no one had banked on that. They were like, DC, we don't know. And it turned out to be like one of the best things they ever did.
Yeah.
I'm excited that they can do it again in the second one. Also, there's more money. So,
well, that's the interesting thing. I think it's going to be really, when that happens, one of two things goes down, right? Mm-hmm. Either one, now you've got some success under your belt and you play with confidence, right?
Right.
Like we're going to take the big shots that we couldn't take because the first time we were just trying to establish this Wonder Woman as a successful movie entity. And now we have the money, we know we've got a hit in our hands, we've got a good cast, we can just go for it. Or a lot of the, you know, necessity being the mother of invention, a lot of the scrappiness that fueled the first things the first time around. It's hard to say that when you're talking about a movie that with a budget that was well over $100 million, you know, but again, no, it was an unknown quantity. Nobody knew if that movie was going to be a success. So there's a little bit of a do or die type of thing that fuels some creative juices. I just feel you see that a lot of times. And so when you, the second time around without those restraints, will it get, you know, The Matrix is another good example of that. Once they got to the second movie and they just,
they had all the money.
Fetters were off. They could just do whatever they wanted. And it was like,
okay, well, we didn't want you to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah,
I think
that's true.
That's the
true.
Big question for me with Wonder Woman. I mean, the trailer looked really, really promising.
It did. I mean, she lassoed lightning.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, I'm intrigued by Kristen Wiig.
Yeah.
You know, the
Pedro Pascal without a helmet.
Right. And I think Gal Gadot and Chris Pine have such great chemistry together.
They do.
So that I'm excited for
and
that.
And it's funny because I was one of the people that in the beginning was not, I was like, I don't know about her as Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And now I believe it. Now I've gone through that and I see it.
And normally I would be, you know, I would not be on board with bringing him back because I was like, oh, well, there go the emotional stakes from the first movie when he died. Spoilers for a movie that came out a couple years ago.
I was going to say.
But no. So when he died, you know, it's this big emotional moment and then we're going to walk that back. And usually that kind of thing just grates on me. But again, because they work so well together and bounced off each other so well, I'm kind of delighted.
Me too. And is it time travel? Is he a clone? What is he? You know, we still don't know the whole story behind him just yet.
Right.
Chris Pine's obviously in it, but is he who we thought he was? You know, when we've done that, look, Iron Man 3 burned me. I don't believe anything anymore. but
Birds of Prey is an interesting case study too. It is. You know, Harley Quinn is an immensely popular character. Is she popular enough to front her own film?
Well, it's funny. We were just talking about this with Doctor Who and the Companions. Birds of Prey, and this long-ass name, Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. She has the Birds of Prey, all of them, in this movie with her.
Yeah.
But the first trailer, you only saw glimpses of them. So I'm trying not to judge this whole movie by the trailers, but I'm having a hard time. So I want to see another trailer with more of the other characters in it. No, Joker's not in it. But I want to see Black Canary. I want to see all the other, you know, people that are supposed to be her supporting crew. I mean, I think that's why I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman a little bit more. Again, this Harley Quinn is from the Suicide Squad that I didn't like either.
Right.
So, and I know the actress did not have anything to do with that, but still, I'm once bitten, twice shy. So I'm going to wait until I see another trailer.
Yeah. I mean, Harley Quinn, Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn was one of the things, few things that I actually enjoyed about Suicide
Squad.
Her and
Will Smith, yeah. Deadshot were the two things that I was like, okay.
Right.
Everybody else, I was like, no.
Yeah, so as long as Jared Leto's Joker doesn't show up, I'm on board.
He's not. Apparently he's pissed off that the other Joker movie did so well.
You know the one that's really intriguing to me, and I don't know, it could be really bad, or it could be really good. New Mutants is finally coming out in
April.
New Mutants
is finally coming out.
There was some speculation at some point that it might never come out after Disney acquired Fox, but here we are, and we're going to get it. Supposedly they were saying this is a horror film.
Yes. Well, it definitely seems like it's still going to be in the thriller.
Yes.
Thriller type film because of all of the buyouts and the things and the changing of the guard of who is owning what character. This one sort of slipped through the cracks. And what's really interesting is a little inside baseball. Last year, I was able to host a couple of panels at Ace Comic Con Midwest, and Henry Zaga was there, and he could talk about it. I've seen him publicly talk about it. Henry Zaga is going to be playing Sunspot, and I asked him point blank, like, is this movie coming out? Like, did you get a check? Are you okay? And he was like, yes, it is actually coming out. It's not going, because I said, is it going to video? He's like, no, it is coming out in theaters. I cannot tell you when, but it is actually happening. So, and I remember being really surprised because that was November and there was no ads, no trailers, no teasers, no talk of it. He's like, it's coming, trust me. And then all of a sudden you saw it being announced and I'm like, okay. And I asked him about reshoots and he quit. He couldn't answer, but he's like, it's been through a lot. And so I am hoping that we still see some of the original vision.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the New Mutants, I'm actually going back to the comics a little bit. If you look at even some of Claremont's work on it, it was a little bit creepy, horror, thriller, you know, and if they're going with that, it could work. If it's self-contained, it could work as long as they don't try to make it linked to another universe.
Well, here's you know what I want to happen? I want it to be really, really good. Because I feel like that would, not only just because I want the movie to be good, but I feel like that would creates like a delightful chaos,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like if it's bad and if it bombs, Disney can kind of just go, okay, we put that out, it's over now, we fulfilled our little obligation and we can move on with our plans for the X-Men universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If the movie is a wild success, then they have to take that into consideration in how they move forward, and I think that would be a really interesting little curveball to throw into the mix.
And this is just, again, a little, if you squint, it might work. The other thing is, it's possible that the movie's really good. They just wanted to hold on to it for phase 5 because it's very clear that the Inhumans thing didn't work. And they were giving Inhumans mutant storylines because they didn't have the mutants. Now they have the mutants. And it's been very pushed out that it's phase 5 is going to be a lot about the mutants. And there's been a lot of speculation. Even when you look at the Black Widow trailer, there, if you squint and you really have to go back and look a couple times and slow it down, there is a superhero that people think is Ursa Major that is in the trailer. And Ursa Major in the comics was a mutant. So if they're, maybe it's really good and they're just saving it for this big mutant X-Men push that they're trying to do. Because listen, if they started it, they did a great job in the comics with Hickman and stuff. So if they're going to go the route of the mutants, maybe it's good. And we get to see, well, New Mutants comes out after Black Widow, I think.
No, before.
Before? Okay.
A month
so
before.
Maybe,
yeah.
So maybe this is the beginning of Mutant Phase 5.
That would be cool. So there's three movies that I want to highlight as particularly interesting to me. And the first one is even more interesting because this isn't usually my genre, but Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah.
Comes out on February 28th. A Blumhouse production.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Dark Universe is over. You know, that whole thing is gone. And from the trailers, it stars Elizabeth Moss, and mm-hmm. it really looks like they are leaning into, you know, the person who is the Invisible Man is her psycho ex.
Yeah.
Who was abusive. And I think I said this when the trailer came out. It's like, this seems to me like the Get Out of that social issue, you know, because what Get Out did really, really well was apply, you know, social issues of racism and, you know,
And classism
and classism
like that.
And stuff like that.
I think that was racism. Us was classism.
Right.
And this would be,
applying, you know, the story of domestic abuse and all that psychological abuse, et cetera, to a horror movie template, and I think it was hugely successful with Get Out. Blumhouse has a really good track record. Elizabeth Moss is a great actor.
Yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting
this
to see how that one pans out.
This girl has found her... Elizabeth Moss, poor thing, has found her genre, which is torture.
Yeah. Whether self-inflicted or not. I mean, she was in a movie last year called Her Smell that was really, really good, and where she was really good in it, but that was all... She was a addict and a, you know, a former punk rock singer who
right.
had to go through this whole thing. Anyway, so that's... I'm really intrigued to see how Invisible Man turns out, even if I'm not the biggest horror movie fan. The second one I want to highlight is... maybe this is, I personally am just looking forward to this one, is Bill and Ted Face the Music. Bill and Ted are coming back.
I completely forgot about that
And let
one.
Me tell you something. In terms of sequels that are better than the original, the one that never gets talked about is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey is outstanding. It is a great, great movie. I encourage everyone to go back and watch it. I think it's available on streaming on some platform or other. And, you know, we're in the midst of the Keanu-sance.
Yes, we are.
So Alex Winter is going to get fed, too, which is nice. And it's just the setup they have for it seems really cool. It's like it's not, you know, they're older. They still haven't saved the world. They have their daughters that they're traveling with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board for more Bill and Ted. I love this franchise. That's saying a lot, considering it's only two movies. But I have a lot of great nostalgic feelings for it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where it goes, much more so than like a Ghostbusters Afterlife, you know, the setup that they
I'm
have.
I'm excited for that.
Are you
though?
Really?
You know what it is? I'm excited because it's this new generation. It's another generation. I want to see what they do with it.
My problem is I want it to be, and maybe it is, but then the trailer just didn't sell it. But mm-hmm. we talked about this again when the trailer came out. Bill and Ted, Ghostbusters was a comedy.
Right.
It was a comedy first with a ghost story attached to it. It was marketed as a comedy. And like, so the trailer for Afterlife
doesn't
looks
look
good for a ghost paranormal story, but like, is
but
it going to be funny?
But you can't put Paul Rudd in a movie and not have some form of comedy because he can do, I'm not saying he can't do drama,
right.
but I really think it's going to be like adventure with funny.
Right. I think it's just that it depends how the balance plays out.
Yeah.
Right?
And, like, but you're right. It was not, and examples of that were not shown in that trailer.
Yeah.
At
but
all.
So, and I think Bill and Ted, based on what I've heard so far, they are very keyed into what made the first two movies tick. And
Keanu.
Well, yeah, definitely Keanu. I mean, and the only thing we'll be missing is George Carlin, of course, because he's sadly gone.
Yeah.
And then the last movie I want to highlight comes out December 18th, and that is Dune.
Yeah, I honestly didn't clock this because I literally thought it was coming out in 2021.
Yeah.
But it is coming out this year.
Denis Villeneuve's Dune. You know, we've had one take on Dune before, which is the David Lynch version mm-hmm. of the film, which is amazing, but widely derided because of how over the top, crazy, and cheesy it is in various ways. Denis Villeneuve is a fantastic filmmaker. I know Blade Runner 2049 didn't do particularly well, but I really loved it.
But it was visually stunning, so I expect that to happen with this too.
Right. Yeah. And Arrival was amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so far done a really good job of like bridging pulpier genre elements with stuff, you know, the type of cinema that makes you think and looks really beautiful and all this stuff, with Arrival particularly and Blade Runner. Dune is a great story. I mean, it's one of the classics of science fiction, and it deserves, I mean, the only thing I would say is that it's going to be hard to do as a film, right?
Like, yeah.
It's one of those things where at this point in where we are in the media world, you're almost like, man, they should just make a Dune series, streaming series somewhere. I mean, Sci-Fi made a mini series a while back that was actually, I thought, pretty decent, but now with like prestige streaming TV, you could really sink something into it.
Exactly. Like, and that's the thing. I was, maybe it would be spinning off, but even when it was first announced, I said the same thing. Yeah. I thought it would be a good idea to make a Dune spinoff, a Dune universe, but maybe they'll Stargate it. Maybe they'll be like, this is the new Dune. And then yes, now there's going to be, you know, TV or streaming Dune.
Well, and it'll just be interesting to see. I mean, Dune is a classic, but Dune is also old, the book.
That's
and
true.
It's not like I don't think it's like, you know, my brother-in-law read The Hobbit to my nieces and nephew when they were little kids, mm-hmm. you know, in Lord of the Rings. And so that type of stuff gets instilled in them at that age. I don't know that that's happening with a new generation with the Dune books.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see whether an audience embraces Dune as a universe, as a mythos, or not,
mm-hmm.
When this movie comes out. So yeah, those are kind of my three big tentpoles on top of the Wonder Woman thing. We haven't even talked about Black Widow.
I know.
Which is crazy.
And it's funny. The weird thing about Black Widow is, like, I'm excited for it, but I'm also a little upset about it because I think this movie should have come out. I mean, this movie's been in the works for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Should have come out years ago. Give Natasha her things. She should have been able to have her story told before they took her out in Endgame so that she would have had a full arc.
Right.
It's sort of like, okay, yeah, by the way, we have this movie, and then this is the last of Phase 4 before right. we get into Phase 5. It's like, but...
I mean, what do you do if Black Widow is a huge smash success? You
yeah,
just
I know, like,
never make a prequel about it?
Exactly.
Or never make a sequel of it?
And then it turns into Star Wars? Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And then even then, the actress is getting older, so how are you going to pull that off
right.
with going back further, 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 unless we go all the way back, and it's her going into the Red Room
right.
as a child, and then that's a...
It's a Benjamin Button franchise. That's what it is.
It is.
But I will say the trailer looks amazing. Like
it does.
It looked really, really cool. So I think we're in that Marvel phase where they're, you know, we've heard some stuff, Kevin Feige talking about Doctor Strange and the Mountains of Madness or whatever the hell it's called. I can't remember. But the horror elements that
yes.
they're bringing into that. So Marvel, I feel like, is at this stage where they can play with genre a little bit. And so this is more or less a straight spy thriller with some superhuman elements thrown in.
And the other thing, like I said, they're introducing, I think, some mutants. And then the other thing is they have Florence Pugh, if you guys all saw Midsommar, you'll remember her.
And Little Women.
Yeah, and Little Women, that's true. And she plays Yelena Belova, who was also not necessarily Natasha's biological sister, but her sister in the Red Room training.
Right.
So in the comics, at one point, Yelena does become, in the version, if you guys remember when... In the comics, when Captain America went dark and was Hydra, he actually killed Natasha in that arc, and Yelena became the new Black Widow.
Right.
If they wanted to, they could make her the Black Widow of the new Phase 5. We don't
yeah.
know. I'm totally speculating. I'm not sure, but I'm just thinking that is something that they could do with introducing, you know, her. And Rachel Weisz, it's nice seeing her playing Melina. She's also... a previous Black Widow. So it's more like we're putting the band back together and it's a Russian band that we'd never heard of.
Yeah.
I'm excited. It's just really funny. If David Harbour starts dancing around in his suit like he did for Stranger Things,
yeah.
this would be like the meme of the decade.
Right. I mean, I think it seems like David Harbour's wheelhouse, right? Like the slightly over past his prime man of action.
Yep.
So yeah, that's going to be, and I mean, you know, say what you want about Eternals not being a level Marvel property, but they certainly have a track record of getting us all on board with stuff that we don't necessarily know about from the beginning. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy being the prime example of that.
That's true.
I mean, that was a huge, huge hit, and nobody knew who Guardians of the Galaxy
was. And nobody clocked it. And here's again, there's a lot of characters that are in this. Like I mentioned, the mutant earlier, as well as Taskmaster. There's a lot of these other characters that lend themselves to other storylines. Taskmaster was a big enemy of Spider-Man. Too. So,
yeah.
like, he could jump over and be in that universe, like,
yeah.
or his son. I don't know if this is a prequel, how far back we're going. But, I mean, there's a lot of ways that they could go with it. But so it seems like they're setting up other places for the other characters to go because we already know Natasha's dead.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
But, yeah, so we'll see how that one pans out. And there is a lot more that we are not going to have time to get into just
yeah.
because we don't want to spend all day. But, you know, James Bond is back. Morbius is coming to the screen. What else haven't we touched on? Godzilla versus Kong.
Godzilla versus Kong, yeah.
Which, you know, Halloween is coming back. So there's a lot going on at the movies this year. Again, without your Avengers or your Star Wars, the field is pretty open.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see who ends up kind of taking, you know, being the story of 2020 at the movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, between all of these movies and everything that's dropping on streaming, I'm going to need to get a second job because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, or just get a clone.
Yes. Oh, my God, I wish.
Yeah, we'll get on that. So, but we want to hear from you. What movies are you looking forward to in 2020? Also, what did you think about Doctor Who's season premiere, your fan theories, Raising Dion, and A Quiet Place 2's trailer? Let us know. You can comment, et cetera, et cetera. Please rate and review us. It really does help if you leave a review. And subscribe.
Yes,
so you
please.
Can hear us in your ear holes every week. Not only us, but also the entire network of, I know, the entire network of Sci-Fi Wire podcasts, Strong Female Characters, The Fandom Files, Jabba the Pod, The Churn is currently ongoing for The Expanse. Plus, we got a whole bunch of other stuff. We have our Lost podcast. We got Behind the Panel. just, you could listen to us all day long, every day.
You know you want to.
Yeah. Clockwork Orange style with your ears propped open. But so please do. And have a great new year, everyone. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2020. We're happy to have you with us. We look forward to a lot more to come as this year goes on. Karima, thank you so much for joining the podcast again this week.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, for everybody, Happy New Year. There's a lot of crazy stuff that's probably on the news and on your feed right now. You know what you want to do? You want to listen to us to take your mind off of it. That's what you want to do. You need superheroes to keep your mind off of the real life crazy.
That's right. And where can people find you to talk about
the real life crazy?
And, no, superheroes and things of that nature.
You can find me, The Blurred Girl, TheBlurredGurl, all over the interwebs, but mostly Twitter and Instagram.
And you cannot find me anywhere. But
I'll be taking messages for Adam.
Yes, exactly. She'll pass anything along. If you want to send me another remix of Toss a Coin to Your Witcher, please pass it through Karima, my representative. But thank you so much for joining us. And please come back next week for another episode of Who Won the Week.